Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to revisit some interesting history, an exhibit marking the 100th anniversary of the closure of Brigham Young College. Was recently displayed at Merrill Kazir Library on Utah State University campus. Logan's Lost College, Remembering Brigham Young College 100 Years Later, explored the history and legacy of the Logan-based institution, which operated from 1877 to 1926. Drawing from the library's special collections, the exhibit traced the historical arc of Brigham Young College through photographs, publications, correspondence, and institutional records. Materials highlighted academic programs, student life, and the college's role in shaping education in northern Utah, as well as the circumstances that led to its closure. Today we're going to be talking with Darcy Pumphrey with USU Libraries. Darcy Pumphrey is Digital Assets Librarian at Utah State University Libraries. Her work focuses on the preservation and continued access of USU's unique and archival digital assets. She previously managed digitization and digital projects for the libraries, and she serves as a member of Utah State Historical Records Advisory Board. She joins me in studio. Darcy Pumphrey, thank you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. I should point out, for today's rivalries, this was Brigham Young College.
Yes.
Now, of course, not Brigham Young University or Brigham Young Academy.
Brigham Young University was originally called.
Yeah.
It was Brigham Young Academy. Yeah.
They had different colors. They weren't blue. You
know, correct.
So we'll get into that as well.
Yes.
So don't storm the studios here with pitchforks as we talk about this. Interesting history. So how did you choose this as a topic for an exhibit?
So I moved here from Arkansas in 2014 and then started the work managing digitization. And we received a grant to digitize Brigham Young College materials. And we have a large collection of the yearbooks, journals, newspapers, photographs. So I started working on digitizing that. So at the same time, I was also pursuing a master's in library science online from the University of North Texas. And locally, the Cache Valley Historical Society has a scholarship for students to do a project on some aspect of history in the Valley. And so I applied for it to do a digital exhibit on Brigham Young College. Since I had been working with the materials so much, I found it really interesting. So I did the digital exhibit, and this was 2016, 2017. And I remember thinking, oh, in 2026, it will be the 100th anniversary of the closure of the school. Someone should really do a physical exhibit on that. And then 2026 came, and I realized I was the one that needed to do the physical exhibit on that topic. But I also had a co-curator, Ruthie Hutchinson, who's a student. She's studying abroad this summer, but it was really great to have her as a co-curator and a partner on this project. She, I think, kept me on task.
So. Yeah. So there is a digital exhibit. People can go to this. I just Googled Brigham Young College, USU, and it came up. And you were telling me the physical exhibit, though officially closed, is still going to be up for a couple of days, probably.
So it is still up through, well, today and tomorrow. The library's closed on Friday for the holiday, but you can get up there to see the physical exhibit today or tomorrow.
Okay, so if you find this discussion interesting and it piques your interest, you can still see that physical exhibit. The online exhibit is up and very interesting. So before we dive into this history, let's situate this. This college was not where USU is.
Correct.
Now, right? Where was it?
So it's located where the current Logan High School campus is located.
Okay, yeah.
So that's what, 100 South and 100 West, kind of that corner.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of that footprint, it mm-hmm. turned out to be kind of a large ish campus.
Yeah, I mean, they had the fields and then where all the buildings are, kind of that whole large block there, except for where the greenhouse is.
Yeah. Is there anything left of any of those buildings now?
No, not that. So I asked someone in the administration office at Logan High School about that, and she talked to facilities, and they said that if there was even anything left, like a retaining wall or something, it was most likely taken out during the 2016-2017 renovation and new buildings that occurred. But what's interesting is the new buildings, the design of the architects designed them to look like those old BYC buildings.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And you were telling me the colors.
Yes.
The color scheme from the old college.
Came to Logan High School.
Live on.
Yeah. There was a gap, though, is when the... So the college, BYC, closed in 1926, and then Logan's school board bought the property to move Logan High School into. And Logan High School's colors were maroon and white.
Yeah.
But so was North Cache High School. Their colors were also maroon and white, which was very confusing from, like, a reporting standpoint. It just was, you know, you have two schools very close to each other with the same color. But Logan High School continued to use maroon and white through the last year was the 1950-1951 school year. And then they decided, because of that confusion with North Cache, and also because the fields had actually remained, they were still called Crimson Field. And so that was kind of a misnomer. It was a little bit confusing. And so they adopted the crimson and gold. But that was in their first time they wore those uniforms was 1951 basketball season.
Yeah, yeah. And there is quite a connection, in this case not a direct connection, between church-founded schools and then public schools that took over.
Yes. Yeah. So when Brigham Young College was started, so it was Brigham Young decided that there would be a school in Cache Valley on July 24th, 1877, and he passed away shortly after that, but a board was formed. They couldn't open that year because that was, you know, they had like a month to organize a school, basically, but Brigham Young had set aside over 9,000 acres of land out in what is currently called College Ward, and that's where the name comes from, and that was to serve as an endowment for the university. He did have an idea that maybe students would work the land there, but that never came to fruition, and it purely just served as an endowment. People leased the land to farm on, and eventually when the school kind of hit some hard financial times, they sold the land. So then they didn't have that endowment anymore, but it was a financial decision they needed to make at the time.
So that is why College Ward is named that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. For people outside of Cache Valley, it's not really a town. It's an area, right? But it is known throughout the valley as College Ward, so that's why.
And then I think that it also Young Ward so was part of that.
Oh, okay.
9,000 plus acres. So originally it was all College Ward, but because of the distance between wards at the time, like they wanted to split off into their own ward.
Yeah.
Just because of traveling distance.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Brigham Young had the vision for this late in his life. In fact, he didn't.
It was one of his last acts. Yeah.
What was his vision for this college?
So he wanted it to be a place where students combined both religious and general education. The public schools had not really been established. So kind of for the first 10 to 20 years, most students in the Valley, if they wanted to get a high school education, would go to Brigham Young College. Logan High School, was first founded as the Lowell School, and I think it started around 1911 and went up to eighth grade. And then subsequent years, they would add the next grade until they graduated their first senior class. Brigham Young College was kind of the only, somewhat the only show in town. We'll have some people probably say this. It was kind of one of the main educational institutions at the time. But once the public school movement took off, and there was a lot of improvement in the public schools, people were questioning why they were paying extra for BYC when they were already paying in taxes to support the public schools.
Yeah. I'll just add parenthetically, my mother went to a legacy school like this. She went to Hinckley High out in Millard, western Utah, which was the successor to Millard Academy.
Oh, okay.
One of these, right? Very impressive, big old building in this very, very small town.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure why they chose Hinckley, but I believe that building's still there.
Oh, okay. So that was my next question.
Yeah, yeah. you know, the similar transition, right?
Yeah,
from church to public.
Yeah, there were like 22 academies at the time in the 20s when the Church Board of Education decided that it was a financial drain to support both general ed and religion. And of those 22 academies, they closed 19 of them. Mm. Most of those were, you know, they were sold or they were transitioned over to state schools like Weber State, Snow College. Those are a couple of examples of ones that still exist in a different format.
Yeah, yeah. So I just want to read this from the exhibit. After graduation, this is Brigham Young's vision here. Mm-hmm. After graduation, each student should be equipped free with a set of tools for mm-hmm. his particular trade. A team and wagon, farming implements made at the institution, worth about $500, so he could start right out producing results. Mm-hmm. That vision didn't happen, I think, but that was the vision.
That was the vision, and the school actually became their consistent focus throughout their 49 years was on teacher training. They kind of went through times where they were a high school and a junior college, or there was a few years where they were able to offer baccalaureate degrees, but the normal school, the teacher training school, was the kind of the consistent through line.
Yeah. Now the original curriculum I've read included penmanship, orthography, I'm sure
typing, stenography.
Yes, yeah. Some things are outdated today. Mm-hmm. But I guess since it was a normal school, you'd teach teaching?
That was a big part of it as well. They had a training school. So first they used the Woodruff School, which was a Logan City school, and it was located on the northeast corner of that 100 South and 100 West. There's an office building there now. So they used the Woodruff School. Then they there was also a tithing office next to Woodruff School, which is also no longer there. They switched to using that. It moved around. But yeah, then it was in the East Building. And then finally it was in the West Building, which was the one that really looks like that Logan High School now kind of pulls all those architectural details from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they had, mostly they would have first through eighth grade.
Yeah. Both men and women, students here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Most of them were going to be teachers, I guess, in the normal school?
For the most part, yeah. That was just the big push, yeah.
Yeah. And since it was a church school, you'd have religious.
Yes. And they also early on had missionary training programs. I guess that was before the MTC, Missionary Training Center, was established. And so these academies would also provide that training for a few months before the men went on their missions.
Yeah. How many students originally?
So I think the first year it was 70 students. I think their peak was, it seemed like it would be around 700 or so. And then towards the end in 1926, it was down to, I think it was about 200 or 300. And that's because the Church Board of Education was trying to wind down these programs. And so they kept, each year would remove a grade from the school.
Gotcha. Kind of borrowed places for a while, but then they started to build out a campus, and you're telling me this is basically the footprint of what is now Logan High School.
Yes, yeah.
In downtown Logan. Building every few years, this would take rich people to be benefactors?
And one of them was Charles Nibley, so that name Nibley at least may be familiar to a number of people. And he donated, it was $15,000, early 20th century, to build Nibley Auditorium, which I think I had figured out was like $517,000 in today's terms. So quite a big donation to the school. And so they built the Nibley Auditorium, and that was around, I think, until the 60s when it was torn down.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I look at these photographs, the impressive sort of Victorian architecture. You can still see this kind of architecture along Center Street, right, and surrounding places, Thatcher Mansion, and near Main Street is another example.
Yes, and actually the Thatcher House that is located across from the Logan Seminary, that was it was built by, I think it was Moses Thatcher Sr. for his son, Moses Thatcher Jr., and his new wife, who were both alumni of BYC. And then that house was, so that house sometimes shows up in these aerial views of campus, and it's neat to see.
Yeah. That's right there, right across from the Logan High campus. Yeah. Moses Thatcher, a prominent, very prominent Cache Valley person, either senior or junior, was an apostle for the church, right? I think, yeah. Tell me about the campus as it gets built out. It's pretty impressive campus.
Yeah. So, I mean, they started out in the old Logan City Hall, which is, I think it was called Lindquist Hall. It's no longer standing. And then while the first, like, purpose-built for BYC, while that was under construction, they actually had classes in the basement of the Logan Tabernacle. Mm-hmm. And then they moved to their current location. They had the east building that they built, which at the time was just called the main building because they didn't have a west building. And there was still so that property was also Thatcher property. They bought it from the Thatchers. They had the Thatcher house, which is, it was next to where the east building is. It's no longer there. And a barn, and they had a stone building that became the laboratory. So they kept some of the existing structures when they were establishing the college on that campus. But they definitely recognized as the school grew, they needed more and more buildings.
Yeah. I'm just reading here from the construction of the mechanical arts building. Mm-hmm. The extensive grounds of the college will be used for landscape gardening arrangements, will also be made to give lady students practical mm-hmm. lessons in domestic economy, needlework, and fitting. So this is very much of its time, right?
Yes.
Late 19th century.
They would teach dressmaking and sewing, cooking, things like that. Yeah.
Right. Let's take a brief break. I want to come back and have you tell me about student life.
Okay.
I guess in some ways, students are all the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
No matter what age, but probably some differences as well. We'll talk a bit more about this as well. We're talking about Brigham Young College. It's been gone 100 years. And so there's an exhibit still up, physical exhibit, and you can see the digital exhibit as well on the Utah State University Libraries website. We'll have more with Darcy Pumphrey following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Darcy Pumphrey, who is Digital Assets Librarian at Utah State University Libraries. She's behind an exhibit, the physical exhibit you can still see for the next couple of days at Merrill Kazir Library. Is that where it is?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the digital version of this is up, and you can find that at Utah State University Libraries website. We're talking about Brigham Young College, which began in 1877 and was closed in 1926, basically on the footprint of what is now Logan High School. Interesting history here. So let's talk about students as this got going. There's a page here, the student experience, talks about tuition. I was interested to have you talk about all that, but I was interested to I'll just read this. During James Z. Stewart's tenure as BYC principal, students were required to sign an agreement that outlined the school's 10 rules and regulations, mm-hmm. such as, I will not visit places of amusement nor leave the school without permission. I will try to do to others as I would like to be done by at all times and mind my own business. some of his rules.
Yes.
I'm guessing those were sometimes broken.
I'm sure.
Just as students are.
Some of the rules say, I will try to
obey
my parents,
yeah.
which I think is very
gotcha.
Funny.
Gotcha, yeah. So where did students come from and what was tuition? Tell me about the student experience.
Well, the majority of the students did come from Cache Valley. In the physical exhibit, I took the 1913-1914 school year, and in the back of the catalog, it listed all the students and where their hometown was. So majority, I think it was 400 of them or so, were from Cache County. But there were some from up in Canada, and there was also a couple from Florida, and then a lot from, Idaho and southern Utah, central Utah. So it wasn't just a Cache Valley school. Students actually came here. They traveled here. They would live in either dorms or a lot of them would board with families in town.
Yeah, yeah. I guess with all colleges, you'd have young people meeting each other. Mm-hmm. Would marriages happen?
Oh, definitely,
Brigham Young College?
There was a lot of, I would see, well, what was neat was looking through these yearbooks, I would kind of get to know the faces and the students' names. And when I would see them kind of year to year and then see them graduate. And then in the Alumni Association updates, I would see, oh, those two got married. And so it was just neat to follow along with their stories.
Yeah. 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 That's always kind of fun. By the way, this is skipping ahead a bit. We wouldn't have any alumni living today. Right?
Correct.
It's too long. But when did that kind of die out?
Yeah. So from what I could find, the last official Alumni Association reunion was in 1966. And then I think like the day after that reunion or 2 days or so after in the paper, there was a letter to the editor where someone was outraged that the Alumni Association had decided to no longer hold these events. And I think they were getting older.
Yeah.
And then in 1968, the president, former president of the Alumni Association and his wife, who also went to BYC, so Peter Peterson and Della Peterson, donated their collection, extensive collection of BYC materials to USU or USAC. And without that foresight there, that legacy of BYC would be lost and I wouldn't be able to be here telling the story.
Yeah.
But we have just such a wonderful collection that shows the 49 years of the school's history.
Yeah. Importance of preserving these
yes.
artifacts. Mm-hmm. You were telling me before we went on the air that another poignant milestone, the last obituary you could find
yes.
that mentioned BYC.
Yes, was 2004. And this was, I just did a search on Utah digital newspapers for Brigham Young College or BYC in kind of the newspapers from the 90s and early 2000s. And the last one I could find was a woman in 2004. That's not to say she's the last living alumni, but that was the last one I could find in Cache Valley area newspapers that have been digitized and where BYC is mentioned in the obituary.
Yeah.
But that kind of gives me a sense of when that kind of all ended.
I'm looking at one of the artifacts here on the digital form, Brigham Young College student body membership card.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all handwritten out, but it is typed in here, not transferable. You can't give this to your fellow student. So tell me about some of the artifacts.
So in the physical exhibit, we have a trophy. It's a trophy that was for the interclass competitions, and so whatever class would win that year in basketball or something, like the class of 1913, that would be engraved on the trophy. What was neat is, so we were looking at this with the exhibit preparator. We were looking at these trophies, and I was like, I wonder if I can find a photo of the trophy. Because there were a lot of, you know, sports photos, and they'd be posing with the ball or something, you know. And then, yeah, it didn't take me very long, and I found that exact trophy in a photo with a group of students posing with it. So that was really cool. So we put both the photo and the trophy in the exhibit. We also have, it looks like a football, but it's actually a hand muff, keep your hands warm, and it has BYC stitched on it, and these are, you know, handmade. A lot of banners. We have a lot of banners. We have the BYC banner that hung in the tabernacle during the memorial service for the school in May 1926, and so that's on display, and you can also, it's on display, and you can see the photo of it at the memorial service. And then just a lot of like student newspapers, journals, the yearbooks, correspondence. It's just, oh, and Ada Morell England kept meticulous scrapbooks, and she was very good about labeling the names of people in many of the photos, which makes it useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really appreciate that her scrapbooks were also donated as part of this collection.
Yeah. What can you tell me about student life? Before we went on there, mm-hmm. you're telling me about hijinks, which I guess
yes,
high-spirited young people everywhere, right?
Yes, and it seems no different from today of just, you know, pulling off pranks and having your inside jokes. So a lot of the jokes that are in the yearbooks or the newspapers, they're, whatever's funny about them is lost to time
mm-hmm.
Because they seem clearly like inside jokes. Sometimes I would get where they were going and I could laugh at it, and other times it was, you know, pretty outdated. But it was fun to be able to like just get a peek into the the lives of students in the 19-teens, 1920s who were just like, yeah, students today or student when I was a student. You have relationships, you have jokes, you have your close friends. I love seeing the pictures where like it'd be a group of people, but there would be two women there, just like you could tell they were best buds, and they were just kind of leaned up next to each other and had maybe a goofy look on their face or something. It was neat to kind of get to learn some of their personalities through those images and through the clubs. Also in the yearbooks, a lot of times they would put some type of like descriptive statement underneath them for different people. Some of them were quite humorous. Like one of them said, of this one young man said he expects to remain a mother's boy for another year or something. Things like that.
Tell me about the clubs. What kind of clubs did they have?
Yeah, so they had literary clubs, debating societies. They had school spirit clubs. There was a club that was called the Athletic Girls, which I thought, oh, okay, sports. But it seemed like most of what they did was put on like vaudeville shows. But they were the Athletic Girls.
Okay.
It was, I really tried to find places where women did athletics at BYC. And there was one team, in one yearbook, there was like a 1904 women's basketball team, and there was nothing else about it. But I was happy to at least find that. Most of it like centered around school spirit and then debating the big ideas of life. They also had an opera company, theater troupe. They did vaudeville shows. And judging by like the costumes and everything, they just seemed very elaborate and intricate. And most of those would have been handmade. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a production.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had anything digital, obviously. Right.
Correct.
No television, no nothing like that. So entertainment would have been different. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah. And you're being taught sewing on campus. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So these students, this is normal school. So the actual students there would have gone on to be teachers.
Correct.
Mostly.
Mostly.
But their contemporary students in other schools would have gone into farming, I guess.
And so with BYC established in, well, really started offering classes in 1878, and then Utah State University, which was the Agricultural College of Utah, was established 10 years later in 1888. And for a while, and I'm not sure the dates, but the Utah legislature actually wouldn't allow Utah State University to have a normal program, a teaching program, because I guess they worked it out that because of BYC, they didn't want that to impact BYC. But there was still a lot of duplication of programs as far as like with agriculture, horticulture, sciences.
Yeah.
There was a lot of overlap, which also kind of signaled the end of BYC eventually. But obviously now the USU can teach.
Yeah.
Do teacher training.
Right. Right. By the way, you've got at least the covers here of all the yearbooks. Mm-hmm. Are yearbooks the same everywhere? And would this have been very much like my high school yearbook? And
it seemed like it. I mean, they had, you know, their sections on the clubs, and would kind of have a little summary of that. They would have updates on the dances they would hold throughout the year, and the sports teams, their records, and then they'd have all the, you know, individual photos of students with their name, and sometimes those funny little descriptions or what clubs they were part of. So, and also all the faculty would be in there. And then they just have these pages of like them goofing off, pictures of them goofing off, and they'd write silly captions underneath them. So there were pictures in those yearbooks where I could see myself and my friends, like in high school, you know, laying on the grass with our hands under our chin, all together and taking a like silly photo.
Yeah, some things never change.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. How would things have been? Tell me. We've been talking a little bit about this. How would things have been different? From our times. One thing I guess I brought up: no electronics.
Correct. Right? Yes, no electronics. I mean, so there was a large focus in their kind of in their available time was on, these interclass sports and doing all these productions, plays. The interclass sport rivalries were pretty big. There was one sport that they played for a time. It seemed like it was about in 1916, called pushball. Hmm. And it was a 6 foot in diameter, 50 pound ball that two teams would try to push to the other opposite sides of the field. I don't know why that didn't catch on, but it looked pretty wild.
Yeah, interesting. I'm seeing photographs of football, old style with kind of the leather helmets. And
And there was actually, I found, and I haven't looked into this one too much, but I read in one of the yearbooks about, it said after a forced 20-year hiatus from football, it's returned. The king of college sports has returned. And so my understanding with that was that it was not allowed for 20 years because of deaths and danger with the sport. But I would be interested in looking into that more, kind of what that meant.
Yeah, it's always been a dangerous sport, and sometimes more so than others. What other sports?
Basketball and baseball and also track and field were big sports there. What was interesting with the basketball and baseball, because it's pretty new sports, but I would see in some of the yearbooks, they would write it as two words, basketball, baseball. Yeah, and then after a while, it kind of started becoming one word, but then they'd switch or they put a dash in there. It was like I was seeing that happen, where people were figuring out how do we write this new sports name?
Yeah. These would have been new sports at that time. Yeah. Let's take another break. We're talking with Darcy Pumphrey, who is digital assets librarian with Utah State University Libraries. She's put together an exhibit. You can find it online at USU Libraries website. And for another couple of days, it's up in a physical form at the Merrill Kazir Library on the USU campus. We're looking at the 100th anniversary of the closure of Brigham Young College, which existed on what is now the footprint of Logan High School, downtown Logan. That ran from 1877 to 1926, and we're recounting this history on the program today. More following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm talking with Darcy Pumphrey, a digital assets librarian at Utah State University Libraries, and she's put together an exhibit. It's remembering Logan's Lost College, remembering Brigham Young College 100 years later. So Brigham Young College was shut down in 1926, so 100 years now. It was begun in 1877, so we're looking at those years. And by the way, to situate this for people in Cache Valley area, the Brigham Young College campus was essentially where Logan High School is today. So, Darcy Pumphrey, tell me a little bit about the curriculum. You have in the exhibit some course catalogs. This was a normal school, so you're teaching teachers.
Yes.
So that's basically what it is, right?
That was a big focus of it, but they also... had a business school, and they also taught domestic arts, mechanic arts. They had these programs also offered at the high school level, a school of music, then, as we talked about earlier, the missionary school, which they said is designed to equip missionaries for active work in the missionary fields without their waiting to be coached when arriving at their fields of labor. So that was kind of the origins of the missionary training center.
Yeah.
They had... what was called a preparatory school, and they said it was for young men and women who have had poor opportunities in their home schools, kind of reflecting that out in these rural areas, the public schools were still trying to take off, and maybe women who were and men who were beyond high school age but still needed some education before they could move into the college courses. And then, of course, the training school, which was first through eighth grade, roughly, and that allowed the normal school students to be able to practice teaching. And that was where Edith Bowen, which that name's probably familiar to a number of people, she was at BYC. I think she got her high school and advanced normal training diploma. And then she was also like a supervisor of teacher training for a bit there before she went to USAC or USU. And of course has a tremendous legacy in elementary education. And there's the Edith Bowen Laboratory School on campus now.
Tell me about other famous alumni.
Yeah, so John A. Witzo. There's a chemistry building on campus named after him. And so he went to BYC for high school. And then later he became the president of Utah Agricultural College. He ended his career as president of the University of Utah. There's just a number of names that I would see in the yearbooks that were familiar, like Ray B. West, another name, A.N. Sorensen. There's one, John Kemp. I mean, Kemp was his last name. But those are just names that I've since living here since 2014, I've come across or seen on campus. And I didn't realize that it kind of all tied back. They got their like kind of educational beginnings were there at Brigham Young College. So that legacy of Brigham Young College is still here in the Valley.
Tell me about Crimson Trail.
Yes, that's another good one that the legacy is in the Valley, even though. So when I moved here and learned about the Crimson Trail, I assumed that it was named that for like the fall colors, Crimson Trail.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember where I was, but I was talking to Tammy Proctor, who was the department head of history. And she said something about if I had found anything in my research about the students of Brigham Young College and of doing a graduation walk there or something, and that's why it was called Crimson Trail. So that kind of planted the seed. And so I started digging and looking in newspapers for any information about the start of the Crimson Trail and why it was named that way. And it was named that because in the spring of 1925, a group of Brigham Young College students, along with the president at the time, W.W. Henderson, they went out for like a canyon work day and they built the first mile of the Crimson Trail. And the Logan Canyon Committee and the Forest Service were, in the article says they're so pleased with their work that they decided to name the trail the Crimson Trail after Brigham Young College, and that it would always be remembered as that, so that we would remember the students and faculty who created that trail. Obviously, I think it's been a little bit lost to time at this point, but BYC was planning on making that an annual tradition. But of course, the school was closed the next spring.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, that spring, the students still went out and worked on improving the trail. And then Logan High School students carried that tradition on for a few more years. But then newspaper reports, it kind of never mentioned it after like 1931 or so. So it kind of faded as a tradition. There was also, I read that at one point, there were three large crimson letter Cs. That was what BYC would use the letter C for crimson that were painted on the cliff sides there.
Yeah.
So I have no idea where, or I'm assuming there's no evidence of that anymore, but I would be really curious if anyone did actually know where those were, had photos of them.
Yeah.
That were apparently out there.
And the name remains at least. Yeah.
The name remains. Yeah. Even though I think, a lot of people, and the course of this exhibit too, when I talk to people, they're like, oh, I thought it was for the leaves in the fall.
Right.
Like, me too.
Right. So this was established 1877, went for several decades, closed in 1926. Tell me about the closure.
Yeah. So when the school was first established, they had a board of trustees, and they really dictated the programs, the educational offerings of the school, the direction of the school. But then in 1888, the church created the Church Education Board. And that consolidated management of the schools in Salt Lake City. And in some ways that was good because it helped provide kind of a standard program throughout the schools as far as the level, what teaching they offer. But it did kind of lead to the BYC's demise eventually because the control of the school was no longer in Logan. It was coming from Salt Lake City. So Where were we with the question?
the closure. The
yes,
reason for the closure.
Reason for and then, the closure, yes.
I imagine, a lot of sadness surrounding this. There's quite a tradition mm-hmm. build up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So kind of in the years leading up to 1926, the Church Board of Education started kind of taking away programs or grade levels because they had done a study looking at like the financial cost of managing all these schools that teach general education. At the same time, the seminary program and the institute program were being developed. And it made more financial sense, honestly, to just put their efforts into the religious education aspect. And so then, so the seminary program is, I saw an article not too long ago talking about its 100th anniversary. And I was like, oh, but corresponds right with BYC's mm-hmm. 100th mm-hmm. anniversary of their closure. And so that's where the church, it made sense to put their investment. But BYU, which was BY Academy, BY University, they had positioned themselves basically to become the flagship institution, to still offer that general education along with the religious education. And one reason why BYU was selected for that over Brigham Young College is because Brigham Young College was right next to USU. So it didn't make sense to try to also have a large college established in Logan when there was already one, but Provo didn't have another large college nearby. There's a good article by J. Gordon Daines, and it's called, so it's in the BYU Studies Quarterly, Charting the Future of BYU, Franklin S. Harris, and the Changing Landscape of the Church's Educational Network, 1921 to 1926. And it really goes into detail about the closure of all these schools, but how BYU positioned themselves to become that flagship university. So,
yeah. And so we've talked a lot about the legacy and then, I'd imagine, a couple decades after, as we've talked about, Alumni Association, mm-hmm. Strong, then that would peter out as mm-hmm. many people died.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Yeah. anything else you'd like to say about this, especially about the legacy of the Brigham Young College or anything interesting that really came up that we haven't talked about?
So the Brigham Young College Library was donated to Utah State Agricultural College when BYC was closed. And so I was reading these newspaper articles about how all these volumes were coming to the USU library and how they had a stamp inside them that said they were part of Brigham Young College Library. And they were to be maintained in a separate area that was called the Brigham Young College Memorial Library. And obviously after 100 years of staff changeover, multiple building moves, like, that no longer exists. But I thought, I wonder if some of these books still exist, if I can find a book with a stamp inside. So I looked at some of the catalogs that would list some of the recent acquisitions for the library for that previous year, and then look in our online catalog to see if I could find them, and then go to the closed stacks in the archives. And it took me a couple of days, but then finally I opened one book, and on the inside there was a stamp that said, Brigham Young College Library, and I was very excited.
You're right, yeah.
And then I found a few more. So that was just, I was holding something that was actually there on campus and then made the move here. And I will say that the memorial service, it was a very sad time for a lot of people in the community who, this was a beloved school, beloved institution. Yeah, I think having a memorial service made a lot of sense. They were mourning the loss of the school.
Yeah, this was in the Logan Tabernacle.
Correct.
I think May of 1926.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
100 years later now. Yeah.
Yes, here we are.
Well, we're at the end of our time. We've been talking about an exhibit, Logan's Lost College, Remembering Brigham Young College 100 Years Later. And that exhibit is still up for another couple of days.
Just a couple of days.
At Merrill Kazir Library on the USU campus. And you can, this is not limited time, anytime you go and see the digital exhibit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
At USU Libraries website. We've been talking with Darcy Pumphrey, who's Digital Assets Librarian at Utah State University Libraries. Thank you so much.
Right. Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for listening to Access Utah.